Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I am Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Bonus Episode 2 / Episode 18, Find Me. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I was worried, like 20 so minutes into this episode, that I'm like, oh my god, this might be the first since first just bad episode of Angela Kang's run. Like, I feel like I've been sold a bill of goods on these bonus episodes. I'm not a happy customer. Then it got around to doing some things with Daryl and Carol and saying some things that needed to be said. It's just the framing device of this old cabin where Daryl had a love affair with some mountain woman and the just the realities of the situation of this sad little map that Daryl drew this supposed mountain man that can't fucking explore a couple hundred acres in the course of three, four, however many fucking years he's going up and down this creek, and he's can't find this cabin, even though it lives in his back. It's silly and also violated. Like, didn't we all decide that Daryl was asexual at some point?
Well, I think we said, like, de facto asexual, right? Because we haven't seen him go for anyone. Well, here we do.
And I know there's like, I don't know everything about the asexual community, but I understand that there's spectrums of it. Just like, you know, that there's people that are in general, but for some people they'd make an exception, or if they had a especially close relationship. Like, I'm not saying like, I thought Daryl's an ace and we're going to pull his ace card. It's just, I didn't really buy it, and I thought the woman that this Leah was kind of terrible, and her scenes were bad, and her dialogue was bad, and it's the apocalyptic fucking jukebox of the greatest fucking victim hits that are about to. So yeah, but the stuff with Daryl and Carol did need to happen. And I actually think it's a weird way to kind of keep some suspense about the spinoff. You know, because
they got a lot of road to pave to get to that spinoff from here.
Yeah. Now it's not a question of will they survive, but it's like, will they both answer these big questions they have about each other?
Yeah.
In a plausible way to go forward. They also might be laying some romantic tracks with Daryl and Carol after all these fucking years. I don't know, man. So what did you think of the episode?
I mostly liked it. I think there are a couple of scenes that, wow, it really falls apart. It's like, I don't know if it's pandemic writing or what, but it's god awful. It's just bad writing.
I'll talk about
those when we get there. But I liked how it gave us some things that we wanted to know about Daryl. Like, what did he do during those five fucking years in the wilderness? Right. Those were big questions. Like, seeing him actually trying to search for Rick, which you kind of get in this episode, but not a ton, right? It's more focused around his relationship with this woman, Leah, during that time. But I thought it was nice that they went back and tried to fill in that gap with whatever. And I guess I wasn't, like, disappointed that Daryl had a romantic relationship. I was more excited for him. Like, it's a monumental milestone in Daryl's life, right? Post-apocalyptic life. I think, like, a lot of people were kind of waiting for something like this. and they probably liked seeing it. I know I did.
Okay. Yeah. It's
I'm not arguing with your other points.
Your take's the same as mine, except for you just genuinely liked seeing Daryl. I just felt like I didn't feel like there was any chemistry or anything beyond what they were telling, not showing about the characters. It didn't feel like, you know, I think Daryl has chemistry with Carol. I thought Daryl had chemistry with Doodlebug. This just generic tough girl character in the woods, like, didn't feel like a real character. Like, even as she was telling me her backstory, I'm like, what the fuck,
dude?
Are you on a, like, you're like, words mean things, like family and sister and son and military unit and like none. Like, this is like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, is this a real? Yeah, was this pre? I just didn't. It didn't make sense. It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, that scene makes no sense. That scene, you have to, I don't know if you're like me, if you're as shockingly imperceptive as I am or something, then you had to fucking stop that scene and rewind it four times and try and figure out
really makes sense
when her train of thought switches from one thing to the next. And it's damn near impossible to decipher what she's talking about at any moment in that scene. Because there are no big contextual clues that it gives you. And for Daryl standing by watching her talk about this, it's got to be just a whirlwind of confusion going on in his brain. Because A, he's got to deal with some emotions here, which is not easy for Daryl, period. But then B, he's got to deal with the fragments of stories he's getting. That scene is very poorly written.
And it doesn't hurt or doesn't help that Norman Reedus is just sitting there like a fucking carved wood statue.
Yeah.
And I know. And I don't know, because like, I don't know what I think about him as an actor. He does some good work. We get some really good feral Daryl, like when he's like fussing with Carol in here. And like, I remember liking him in Boondock Saints, but I don't know. The thing is like, whether he's a good actor or bad actor, I'm pretty sure he was directed to act that way, because that's how Daryl's not the person who's going to come up and like give you a big hug.
For sure.
But it makes for a very stilted, like, I don't care about anything this lady's saying. Daryl doesn't seem like he cares about it. Like, what the fuck? So weird. It's weird. Left me confused.
I find it weird the way that Carol was acting at the beginning of this episode too. I don't know if she's like putting on like a happy face and trying to like gloss over all of the real shit that is between them or what, but like, it felt tonally very strange. I think they did it just so they could contrast it with like 5 years ago of her. But
100%, but it was a hard, sharp hairpin turn, because
it really was.
When the first time she showed up as like kind of medium length Carol hair, I'm like, are they doing this weird thing where they're casting Carol as this cabin lady? Like, to kind of convince me that Daryl's overlaid the memory. I was like, that's kind of an interesting idea to have this like lover played by Carol, because she just seemed like a completely different character. She was dressed like, I don't even know, fucking Blossom from the old TV show. She shows up like this flower child hippie with like this medium length straw white hair. I didn't know what to make of it. And when I finally figured out what was going on, I'm like, huh. But yeah, but like I said, the last 20 minutes with Carol and Daryl needed to fucking happen. All that shit needed to get said.
That was great.
I feel like that this is where the pandemic sucks, because like, maybe this would have been better spooled off as like the B plot of stronger episodes, you know, take two or three, like, okay, Daryl and Carol are on this mission and you just a little bit more, or maybe if you didn't have to have a whole episode centered on these two, you could just dispense the love affair plot, which I think if this is just a conversation that like Carol and Daryl have the first time they get away from people where it's not a life and death situation, they're just out camping and they're like getting some shit taken care of, that's awesome. But they had to use this tortured metaphor, because otherwise they got 25 minutes of an episode.
Right.
And, you know, they can't bring Jeffrey Dean Morgan here because he's got COVID or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I mostly like this episode. I think there are two or three like really big mistakes in it, or just like fumbling the ball kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. We'll talk about it.
Well, yeah. Do you want to get into the episode itself?
I do.
Well, too bad, fucker, because we got something else to talk about.
We sure do.
There's some real life news. It's good to talk about some current stuff, you know?
Yeah.
This was just sent to us by an anonymous source, but it's been widely reported in days since. Said, thought you guys might find this interesting, and they linked us to a Deadline article that's apprises us of the surprise conclusion, at least of the Frank Darabont saga of Walking Dead, and that AMC settled to the tune of $200 eye-watering million dollars to Frank Darabont and his agency to essentially settle the hash. Like, he gets $200 million and he goes the fuck away.
Right.
He stops testifying devastatingly in court. He stops making them look bad. This is amazing. And I gotta say, it must have been really worth it saving all that money on sets and writers. Because, you know, after you've done a decade of pumping this thing dry, you can write a big fat fucking $200 million check to Frank Darabont. It blows my mind that manifestly all the things that caused creative friction with him and AMC was them being fucking cheap assholes. And as soon as he left, the show became just this renowned cheap asshole show.
Yeah.
And they still have to write almost $250 million check to him to make it right.
And that's not even everything he wanted, right? Like, they wrote this check because otherwise he'd probably get more. I think he calculated at like $280 million. So they're getting like a big discount.
Well, plus
settling.
They're
this.
About like, I don't know how I feel about this, but they're about to embark on a 3-movie adventure. There's two more spinoffs coming. I think AMC wants to cut their losses because every single thing they release just becomes another fucking exhibit in Frank Darabont's lawsuit and more pies for him to get his fingers in. So like, if they wait another 5 years, this might be $250-300 million. And they're still paying lawyers the whole time too. So like, this is just insane. Like, and it gets me retroactively riled up, because I remember like from the beginning, we're I think on the right side of this history. Like, well, this is just, they're not taking their time on the Herschel farm, on the Green farm, because it's the right thing to do story wise. They don't want to fucking pay for a new set. We're going into the second season of the Governor arc, not because it's the right thing to do, but because they got Woodbury and they got the fucking prison and they haven't fully amortized the cost of that construction yet. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I'm watching HBO spend $50 million an episode or $50 million a season on that fucking show that's going into the stratosphere. 150, 200 million people are watching that worldwide at the end of the season. Click over the channel, The Walking Dead starts over the same. So they're like going down, struggling to get 5-6.
Yeah.
It just seems like the smart thing to do would have been to pay Frank and pay his people and pay for some sets so they could tell the fucking story of the comic the way it was supposed to be told.
You would think so, but they get creative over there at AMC, you know? I mean, that's what this whole thing is about, the creative accounting. For people who don't know, I guess we should like talk about the lawsuit itself, what it was for.
Yeah, because it's not really, you know, the creative crimes the AMC committed are not even counted here. This is just their actual accounting. What can you tell us about, like, what it was actually about?
Yeah. So the idea is like AMC Studios and AMC Networks are two different entities, and one of them makes the show, AMC Studios, and one of them buys and distributes the show from AMC Studios. That's AMC Networks. So what, you know, Frank Darabont's lawsuit was alleging, and what this settlement basically admits is, hey, we were not paying the proper royalty fees or licensing fees, rather, for what the AMC studios created. We were giving like a huge discount to AMC Networks, which is who had the contract with Darabont to actually
this conflict of interest, this
right, for him to actually get royalties. And so they were like, I think what they were doing is just like paying a ton of extra money or not enough money to one of these entities so that they could shift dollars, shift profit, essentially, away from all of the profit sharing that they would have given him. And this, the hilarious thing is, this is not the only lawsuit that they have to deal with. They also have lawsuit that I guess is going to trial, assuming they don't settle it before then. But November, the LA courts are supposed to hear Robert Kirkman, Gail Ann Hurd, Glenn Mazzara, and another of the producers, executive producers. They've got a lawsuit for the same thing. So,
oh my God,
the saga is not over yet, but this is like a big, big win for Darabont, obviously.
Yeah. And the thing is like, do you remember the bitter money struggles that Gilligan went through with the Breaking Bad, like the like contract holdouts? And like, we didn't even know we'd get a final season of Breaking Bad, and like the Sable Rat. And like, I remember the press at the time, like, was like, AMC was so happy that their new hit show, The Walking Dead, was made by an AMC studio, because they wouldn't, like, the press at the time was, we will never be bent done over the barrel, essentially, by another production team again. Mm-hmm. 10 years later, the monkey paw twitches and they're going to be bent over multiple barrels by multiple people. Because it turns out you still can't fucking commit crime. You can't fucking screw people over, even when it's the left hand screwing the right hand.
Right.
Like, you got to still honor contracts, and you got to fulfill obligations, and you got to, you know, share the money. And we talked about the buckets of money this show. This is just this is just unchecked greed and where it always ends up. And unfortunately, I imagine all the people that made these deals are probably long gone at AMC. Mm-hmm. And the team that's left behind is the one that's got to have to pay the penalty. But I just, I don't know. If I was a shareholder, I would be pissed. But I'm not. So
I'm curious to see if this second lawsuit does go to trial. Because like, the other thing I'd be worried about if I were AMC with their creative accounting is legit no shit tax fraud. Like, are they shifting money around creatively and in ways that like the IRS is going to be interested in, or just Frank Darabont? Because you go to trial and those things get laid bare, right? Which might be why they settled this, and maybe we'll settle the other one as well.
I didn't think of the other liability here. The potential criminal liability, but I don't know. Can the feds, can the, because the thing I've heard about the IRS is they don't got enough money. They're broke. Right. They're like taking Ubers to and from.
They're no Frank Darabonts, right?
Yeah. They're no Frank Darabonts. They're not the ones that knock nowadays. I don't even know, like, in civil court, can like the feds raid through stuff to, I guess they can, it's public information. But yeah, maybe they're worried about that too.
It could be. It's just speculation. I don't know anything about their accounting, but yeah, apparently it's very creative.
Yeah, I wonder. It's just like, again, it's I've said this many times. There is an alternate universe where Frank Darabont remained the sure hand on this helm, mm-hmm. and steered it to a phenomenal Emmy award winning 10 season run. And the walk and Game of Thrones shit the bed the last three seasons, and it's the consensus best show in the last decade. Like, right. That was what they were set for with those because I think season one of The Walking Dead is in the league of Game of Thrones season one.
Yeah,
because Game of Thrones season one wasn't Game of Thrones season three, right?
Right.
But instead of like getting stronger and stronger and more budget and better stars and better writers and better directors, it was, you know, this toilet bowl swirl of less experienced showrunners going to less experienced showrunners, hiring people off the fucking animated Drek line.
Yeah.
You know, we've this is well-worn history.
Rangers, yeah.
And even after all that cost saving and greed, you're still getting fucked. You're still going to end up having to pay. And pay more, and right. without the, you know, the huge audiences and accolades you've done, if you just told the fucking, you know, story the way it's supposed to be told. Yep. So look what you did yourself. Quit hurting yourself, AMC. There's no way after this settlement. I think, because even the article we read said that they were rattling sabers, like the lawyers have to, like, until the ink is dry, you can't be like, well, the AMC's actually flop sweating in chambers, and they're desperate to settle. Have to be like, we are confident in our claims and we are ready to prosecute this to the fullest extent, right up into the point where you roll over and die, fall on your sword. So
for sure.
But you'll hear it here first. I will be gleefully announcing whatever deal Kirk. I don't even particularly like Kirkman and especially Mazzara. But I liked AMC executives even less. So
sure,
this is popcorn worthy entertainment. Now we can move on to the episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, we start off with Daryl having some trouble starting his bike, and Carol invites herself along on where his journey, wherever he's going, out hunting or something, I don't know, once he gets it started. Daryl drops his map. I thought they were making him look pretty dumb right off the bat, just like, Daryl, the master tracker, dropping his map. And then as the episode progresses, you see how important this map is to him. And you're like, oh, God, mm-hmm. Daryl dropped that important map.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. And the weird vibe between Daryl and Carol starts right here in the beginning. They sort of are then stalk through the woods, find this dead deer, and it makes them head toward the river. And this is like very strange, Carol. I don't know. How do you feel about that? Was she seems a little more bubbly than I expected a Carol in this time to be.
This to me feels like Melissa McBride has come back after being away from the show for 18 months and trying to get back into swing of the character. And also they're probably a lot of her and Norman Reedus having legitimate affection for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that on screen and off screen dynamic bleeds over, and it led to her being kind of coming across as ditzy.
Yeah. It's very playful kind of vibe, which doesn't some mesh of that, with like, what I know of their history right now.
Yeah. Like some of that is like this like squabbling sibling energy. It's fine. And I guess like this might be them experimenting with trying to find a tone to the new show. It's like, what do we want the dynamic of these? Is this like a buddy cop where they're kind of busting each other's balls? Is this like brother and sister, they're essentially family, and, you know, or is it like, is this going to be a will they won't like moonlighting with Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd type of deal? I fucking don't know. And this episode's kind of all over the place with that, because, you know, as cute as it is to see, like, you know, Carol, like, crowding, you know, Norman, Daryl's crotch on the motorcycle, you know, like, scoot back now. I'm the one steering. God damn. Like that. That was really funny, but it doesn't match up with the shit that they had to get up to. And I don't know, maybe you could make the argument that Carol knows she's bad and she knows this relation thing's coming, because it felt, some of this felt a little manipulative. Like when she says, like, oh, I feel like feels like that no one loves me anymore, and our luck has run out, and the community's disrupted and stuff. Like, well, gee whiz, Carol, what the fuck's gone on? Yeah. What's caused all this non-fellow feeling in the communities? What's half the communities are missing? What's up with that? There was definitely something off, and I wasn't sure how much it was deliberate and how much of it was COVID shit and what, but it felt off.
Yeah, almost like she was trying to prompt a conversation to happen, but turns out she wasn't. It just happened organically. It felt a little weird.
It's a lot of it. Like, she's like got this, like, I got the super foot. You should. It felt like very little sister energy. And then she's overfeeding his dog, and Daryl's like, come on, he don't need all that. But like, it was a lot of the same thing in the first 10 minutes. Yeah. And it felt a little bit too buddy cop energy, or squabbling sibling energy.
Right. And then Carol gets a cramp in her foot, and they decide they're going to go spearfishing, and she nails her it super in one. Foot. Yeah, her super foot, supposed super foot. She nails it one, they eat, Carol has a hard time filleting the fish, which we'll find out Daryl knows how to fillet a fish because later in the episode or earlier in his timeline.
We can fillet a fish because he's fucking Daryl. We don't have to invent a filleting origin story for him. He's been filleting fish since he was 4 years old. No, surely not. They're not suggesting that he didn't know how to fillet a fish.
I would have thought he knew as well, but I thought also that they did that in this episode. But anyway, Carol worries that their luck has run out before dog runs off after something, and Daryl and Carol chase it, and it leads them to a house where Daryl sees a phantom girl and dog sitting on the porch. That's all I can call them right now, because we don't know yet what they are.
Yeah. Yeah, I've said, like, in season 9, I think that I took a lot of, you know, mid pandemic comfort from the stoicism of Daryl. Like, he had a couple choice quotes about, like, when he's talking to Lydia about how you don't, you know, have to accept when things get shitty. You know, you don't have to put up with it. And this line here where he's like, you know, Carol's going off on doomer mode and being like, this world, the dead, it's all going to catch up to you eventually. And he's like, only if we let it. I ain't going to let it. I was like, fuck yeah, that's a cool, like, yeah, the world's a miserable place, and that, and worse, it's unfeeling and doesn't care. But, like, we don't have to put up with that collectively or individually. Fuck that. I like that.
Okay. And you weren't Daryl's retroactively disappointed animal. Where that philosophy came from.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it gets tainted. Okay. It gets tainted. But honestly, like, you know, like that, like, I don't believe the relationship, but the fact that Daryl took a couple positive things from another human being's relationship, that's not bad writing.
No, that's the part
her
I like.
Actual character was the dumpster fire.
All right. I was worried this is going to be the Walking in the Woods episode that you feared last episode was going to be. And we get a lot of
walking.
They're
doing a lot of that. Because, you know, outdoor, wide open spaces, I get it. That's going to be a backbone of any COVID protocol.
For sure.
It is. It's just jarring because it's the return of the bad old days. Probably for necessity instead of just laziness. Like, God, do we want to scout locations or do we just want to walk in? You know, but it also made it. I don't feel like any of these show writers have ever, like, gone out and played in the woods. Because this isn't the right part for this criticism. Let me put a pin in this. Let's keep moving on.
All right. So Carol suggests they stay the night at the house, and Daryl looks around, spots a grave, and then starts to remember his life at this house 5 years ago.
Can we talk about how this is visualized? Because, unfortunately, last night, like, this new thing on Apple TV, Apple TV Plus just came out. It's a Keegan-Michael Key is in it. Cecily Strong is in it. It's called Schmigadoon, which is a send-up of an old God damn it, who's the guy in Singing in the Rain? Gene Kelly.
Okay.
Thank you for the musical assist, Jim. it's a send-up of an old Gene Kelly musical, Brigadoon, where he goes out on a hunting walk and gets transported to this mystical land 100 years ago. This looks exactly like the effect of the leprechaun that takes the Schmigadoon green. Like, this emerald mist seeping up and, like... And I literally watched the first two episodes of Schmigadoon and then, like, you know, I should go ahead and get my first watch of Watching Dead in tonight. It went right into that and it did not help the comparison because it looks terrible. It's so fucking bad, man.
Yeah, they blanket everything with like this gold kind of filter, I would say.
Everything it's like on Golden Pond being pumped full of fucking VX nerve gas is what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
Was I having a stroke? Was there green gas? There was like, okay, I was like, you're looking at me like there's like, what, green gas? What is there? It's like fucking carbon monoxide leaking in his home, maybe, but I didn't see it in the episode.
No, it's in there. I mean, I'm sure there's green gas. I noticed the gold tint to everything more than...
I thought Loki might be enchanting it, you know? Like there's some Loki variant fuckery going on in my Walking Dead, which I wouldn't even be mad about, but...
Yeah. We get Dog as a puppy meeting Daryl, and Daryl hangs. I don't know. It's tough to say if this is the same map or I think this is a map. A different map that he'll have to remake later, but he hangs a map up.
I think so. Yeah.
In his shelter, and he circles a location on the river, and then he walks to the river where he meets Carol, and she tells him a bunch of stuff about what's going on back home. Maggie left, all that. And they talk about his mission to find Rick, and Carol gives him some supplies and they part ways.
I hadn't quite turned on the episode yet. And when I, you know, the green gas, I'm like, okay, this is weird. But it resolves to like Daryl playing with the puppy, super cute. Daryl goes to a bushcraft shelter. Oh my God, this is like aimed squarely at my heart. I'm loving all this stuff. But then he hangs up this map. And I swear to God, this looks like a map that Christopher Robbins would make of the 100 Acre Woods, where he plays with Pooh and Rabbit and all that shit. It looks like one of those fucking things that Billy used to draw for the family circus. And it can't be more than a couple dozen square miles. It made the world seem so small. And like, I don't know that these show writers have ever gone and played in the woods. Like, the idea would take a guy like Daryl 5 years of base camping this fucking river to explore for Rick's body or any sign of him. I mean, I don't know. It just seemed crazy, like the type of crazy to where like you couldn't even lie to yourself that, oh, I'm still out here looking for Rick. Like, it would be one thing if he's exploring the entire Atlantic seaboard, like, you know, the currents once a river here. I still got to explore all the way to Maine. I've done some calculations. I got to go see Stephen King's old house. But like, this is just like one fucking county. That it doesn't. Yeah, I don't know. It really started taking away cool points from Daryl.
Yeah. Yeah, he does stick around there for a remarkably long time. And it can't just be because of Leah, as we see later in the episode, because he doesn't really get to know her for like years. Right. I mean, it keeps going. Yes. 10 months later, 8 months later, a year later. And I'm like, he's been sitting in this same place for 3.5 years and he barely knows this woman. Yeah.
The You're scale right. of time, the scale of the distance, just it didn't fucking work.
It's off.
And like, I felt like the last couple of seasons, they made the world feel big again, you know, because like there weren't any good roads between the settlements and it took a good day's journey and all that kind of stuff. But like this episode went and kind of made it small, feel small again. Like this is a resident, you know, like this is all taking place in a residential neighborhood or something.
Yeah. There was also a weird transition in this that making me do a double take, because at the end of the scene Daryl like turns away from the camera and walks off screen, and then another Daryl comes like fades in and comes out of the wood. There's this weird fade transition that makes it look like Daryl is stalking Daryl. And I thought, is this like a metaphor? What is this, Darylception? What's happening here? I can't.
There's a couple weird things where they did stuff like that, where they were trying to set up the time jumps going back and forth and like which memory and where, and, you know, because it's essentially a nested time jump. You mm-hmm. know, you've got the current time, and then you got like right after Rick disappeared, and then you kind of like reverse jump back and see. But it also fades back and forth between the framing device of Carol and him out in the hunting trip, you know, telling the story about his past at this cabin
in the present.
And I found it hard. But, you know, it's you'd think with all the fucking gold sepiotone and green gas, it'd make it really fucking easy to know when Daryl's flat. But like, even with all those visual extravagant tools, they don't really utilize it. And like, goddamn, I've been critically watching television for a decade now. And it's like, just pick a filter. One is old, one is new, and then people don't get confused. And I don't know. Plus, it's like,
it doesn't
the other thing
help
is like,
that I think they're filming this during the fall of 2020. And so, like,
yeah,
the golden hue that they put on everything in the past is also just kind of there on the leaves in the present. So, yeah, it makes it a little hard to distinguish sometimes.
Yeah, they also like they didn't do anything to Norman Reedus as far as aging him or de-aging him.
No.
So like there was none of those,
and I guess nothing.
He is just like the squalor of his angel vest is the only thing that you can tell a little bit of passage of time.
Oh, yeah.
Because like when they first flash back, he's got both of the wings on. They're still in good, you know, fairly intact and good shape. And, you know, by the time present day, he's lost one of them, hasn't he?
And didn't it was it Judith who gave him another one?
Yeah. So it's not as, you know, old school wings as they used to be.
Yeah. So then Daryl spots a boat in the woods with some plausible Rick legs under it, and he investigates. It's turns out to be a desiccated zombie that's probably not Rick, and he squashes it.
That could
it.
Be Rick.
That's what I was thinking.
That could be Rick.
Yeah. It's so
it's
like
not Rick
decayed that it would be impossible to tell, right?
Right.
Those are his
pants.
Those are boots. Like. Just give up. Well, yeah, I mean, what if he squashed Rick's head as a zombie, didn't realize it, now he's looking, forever roaming the land, looking for a guy that he squashed?
Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing. It's like, I think the episode kind of says he's not looking for Rick. He's just not ready to face reality. So, like, yeah.
He's running,
I mean,
right?
We know Rick is alive somewhere, but, yeah.
There is the parallel between Daryl and Carol in later parts of this episode, and it begins here, right, that he is not necessarily looking for Rick. He is just running from whatever his emotional fears are here.
He doesn't know when to quit.
Yeah, doesn't know when to quit, the hardships. And then, you know, one of the things I like about his relationship with Leah is she teaches him that he has to be there for someone, right? He's got to choose a life. He can't just be out there roaming the countryside. Or if he is, like, make that his life. Don't try and live this in between where he's meeting up with Carol and lying to himself about Rick. No, just if you want to be alone in the woods for the rest of your life, just say that and do that.
Yeah.
So I like that stuff with Leah and Daryl. But we'll get there.
Yeah, we will.
Daryl weathers a storm, but his map does not. And I can't believe how much water comes down right on this map. It's kind of hilarious.
Here's the thing. So I've gotten in, like, one of my pandemic hobbies is this bushcrafting stuff. I started watching a bunch of YouTubers where they just go out in the woods and they just build shit with their bare hands. And I feel like that Daryl, fucking bushcrafter. But Daryl can't even keep rain off of his head in his own goddamn shelter that he's had years to improve.
Yeah.
Like, and the other thing is, like, you know, when you're like building something in like Fortnite or any kind of construction, like Minecraft, a lot of times when you build something, it just looks like a sloppy piece of like a bunch of different sizes of like plywood and like stuff is like, you know, because it's like a cartoon's idea of what construction looks like. Daryl's bushcraft shelter is made like that. There's like big pieces of corrugated aluminum, but they're not in like any kind of like straight line, like someone used them intentionally. It looks like so like Daryl just like hung it up at a 45 degree angle, nail, put another one up at a 30 degree angle, nail. Hell, it looks like a big metal band-aid. That's how you build a shelter. Like, and he's just sitting here
having his Lieutenant Dan strapped to the fishing to the shrimp boat moment as his map's disintegrating because he just can't make shelter. Like he's a bushcraft guy that can't make shelter. How the hell does he live? This is the East Coast. This is not a tropical place where you can just fuck around with exposure, man. His ass could die.
Yeah.
Hypothermia. It's real.
Yeah. They talk about it later in this episode. They bring it up. I get the feeling that like whoever's writing this show has a thing for people who should know what they're doing that are barely getting by on the skills they have. Because look at the blacksmith. Like this lean-to thing that he's got going reminds me of like the first blacksmith's shelter, right?
Yeah.
Like he's sets up a shop. He doesn't know what he's doing. He needs examples of a shelter to build a fucking shelter.
So, he needs a Boy Scout manual. It's pound the decent A-frame together. Yeah.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. So I guess that extends to our arch badass Daryl, which kind of sucks because I think more of him than the writers do, apparently.
And like the thing is he could have made like a really cool rustic, like lean-to kind of looking thing. And it's kind of that. But if it was as well made as and maybe they're saying that like, well, he spends all his time looking for Rick and he doesn't have time to do this, that, and the other. But like, I don't know, 5 years
for 5 years.
Yeah. I didn't get it. It didn't make him look cool. And I think they wanted him to look cool.
You know what else doesn't make him look cool? Getting knocked to the ground by thunder. Like physically knocked to the floor, floored by thunder.
Startled him.
I mean, I assume like, it can happen.
Daryl's
right?
Like a fainting goat. He hears a loud noise and just that's it.
I mean, I've heard some cracks of thunder that gave me a bit of a shake. And I bet if that happened like right above me, it'd be devastating with no shelter. But like, yeah, badass Daryl just floored by thunder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, 1 year later, Daryl's made another map. He's still looking for Rick in the same old rundown shack. He comes across the house and dog, and then he runs into the house, and he's attacked by a woman who forces him to stay.
What the hell happened in this scene? Like, Daryl, this dog came to meet Daryl. Did Daryl know about the cabin? Because that's the other thing. This thing is a short walk from his base camp, but he's never been to this cabin before.
Right. Well, he's been, so has the he been lady searching gets the river? Is that why?
Well, I'm just like, how did the zombie, like, I'm just trying to.
Oh, the zombie is a huge cabin, problem.
There's this cabin 5 minutes from Daryl's camp that he's never seen before. And this woman's a badass loner who has military service. And she's been living in zombie apocalypse for years by herself. She somehow invited a gentleman caller that's a zombie inside her parlor. He fooled her, revealed he's a zombie once he sat down for tea, and she locked herself in the bathroom and was loading her shotgun, ready to come out and deal with the zombie. Meanwhile, the dog's like, I've never seen my mom not be able to handle a zombie before. This is some weird shit. He runs out the open door, goes grabs Daryl, who comes back along the path. She's again just like, she's just loading so many shotguns into this double barrel shotgun. Like it's the double barrel shotgun. It must hold like 100 shotgun shells, right?
Sure.
Not 200. Daryl comes back. There's the zombie. He puts it out just in time for her to come out with her fully 100 shell loaded shotgun to be like, what the fuck are you doing here, dude?
It's Herschel.
Did I recap what happened, right?
I think so. Yeah. Like it shocked me that a woman who could survive the show continues to forget that we are years into an all-out zombie apocalypse has devastated the population, and anyone surviving has to be constantly on high alert, especially if they live alone. Especially
they
if they live alone.
Very competent surviving or has a compelling story for why they're not. Like, you were one of Negan's wives and you fled the destruction of Savior Town, and you've never had to fight. All you know how to do is look pretty and wear pumps. Someone protect you. This is not her backstory.
No.
How did a lone zombie get in there,
right,
let alone corner her into the bathroom or wherever she was at?
Yeah, and if it did, how has this not happened before and it's gone horribly wrong for her and she died? Like,
100%.
Yeah.
There's like multiple problems with the setup of this. But the thing is like, this was annoys me is this like felt so writerly because the writers are like, we need Daryl to confront Carol about how single-minded she has been and how she doesn't accept compromise. She doesn't work as a team. She just gets in her. We'll create a situation where Daryl loses his fucking mind for like 5 years while Carol's relatively sane and trying to bring him back into civilization so they can. But that's dumb, man. Like, did Daryl need to have to go through the exact same thing as Carol for Daryl to be able to call her on it? Like, I don't know. It
does feel really
didn't hold together for me.
I don't know. I thought it helped. I think there are a couple of things they're doing in this episode that helps. Like in this next scene, where we're back in the present and Dog digs up the floorboards and finds this box. Carol finds the box, which has some stuff in it that makes her realize that he hasn't told her the full story about something that we as an audience don't know about yet, which I think is interesting because that like strengthens the bond between these characters. You know, it's like us as sort of the omniscient outside viewer should know about this before Carol does. But the fact that she knows it before we do, like, says, hey, they have a real relationship off screen that I thought that was kind of cool. And they immediately like jump in and clue the audience in, which is fine. But to me, it was like, oh, yeah, there's something that a conversation they've had at some point that we weren't privy to, but was meaningful.
Right. But she now knows that there's something you've been holding out on me and you got to tell me whatever you want to tell me,
which gives us as an audience the opportunity to get in on that story, which I liked.
Yeah.
And the woman drags, we're back in the past here. A woman drags the Walker body outside as Daryl sits with his hands bound to a chair. She points a shotgun at him and asks him who he is. He tells her his name and he's just trying to help. She says, what kind of help you think I need? And Daryl says, how about keeping walkers out of the room you sleep in? Huh? How about that?
Yeah, it's basically got four walls and one zombie in it. I don't know. Seems like way too many zombies to wall ratios trying to help you out with that. Like,
yep.
It's like you come across someone that's like shit their pants and you take pity on them like, oh, my God, this could happen to any one of us. You sneeze too hard after eating a burrito from Taco Bell and it could be there, but for the grace of God, go high. And you try to start, you get some baby wipes. I'm a dad. I got baby wipes. So start, and they smack you. What are you doing? Acting like I don't know what's going on. Like, dude, you're going down to pants with shit and breeches. You can't tell me that you don't need help. You're in a zombie apocalypse. You got a zombie living with you. You need some help, lady.
Right.
This isn't a fucking Odd Couple.
Yeah, so she takes offense to that, and she cuts him free, says, get the hell out of my house. And he asks her name, but she won't tell him.
Also, here's another thing. Did you notice the way Daryl puts his backpack on?
No.
Daryl took his backpack and put it on like I imagine a child would put on a vest. He, like, flips it over his shoulders and, like the pack weighs, like, the only thing he's got in there is a pack of Kleenex. Not a box. Those little packs they sell at gas stations that have like three packs. That's the only thing. This has zero weight. This motherfucker is carrying his whole life's possessions on his back and it has zero. Like, this is a prop backpack. It drives me crazy when like actors gesture with like a coffee cup that's supposed to be full of coffee. And it is like, can you throw like, I don't know, 10 pounds of weight in his backpack so Norman Reedus acts like a normal person putting on a backpack?
Right. Yeah, I didn't notice it, but totally.
Also, I encourage anyone that values backpack accuracy to check out the scene for textbook bad backpack.
I mean, I have more nitpicks if we really want to nitpick. This rope, she ties him up with this rope. She comes in and she cuts a perfectly good rope, which is probably pretty valuable in the apocalypse. I don't know. It seems useful. She just slices it in half instead of untying his hands.
It seems like it takes a hell of a lot of time to make cordage, you know, time you don't want to spend, the time you could spend with your zombie buddy, you know,
especially that thick. I mean, I saw the shit that Tom Hanks was roping up and it was thin. That shit'll break. That this is nice, VHS. Thick rope.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
All right. Anyway, 6 months later, Dog finds Daryl again, and Daryl escorts him back to the woman's house. They talk for a minute. She still doesn't tell him her name, and then he leaves. It's very, like, uneventful. They're really, like, spooling out Daryl becoming comfortable with a person.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
And it's like this kind of ridiculous will they, won't they, you know, and it's told by the proxy of her revealing his her name, you know, because like Daryl's like really interested. He's like, you know, she's playing reverse psychology. But then, you know, when Daryl loses interest in the game, he's like, you know what? Fuck you. I don't care your name. Walks away, storms off. She whispers over her back, Leah, and like, boom, he's got her back on the right back on the hook.
Well, that doesn't happen for another 8 months, man. That's
sorry,
next
I skipped ahead to the next video game font that enabled me, that told me what my next mission was. 8 months.
Yeah, no, this scene is the one where the thing that he says to Carol earlier in the episode about it'll, you know, it'll catch up to us all one day, only if you let it. That's what this woman tells him. So he took that from her, which I don't know. I suppose that's cool. I like that. It informs his past and his future. And that was fine. That was not something I had a problem with in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But then 8 months later is a scene you're talking about where he finally learns her name. He's searching, gathering wood. A bunch of stealth walkers suddenly appear, which I thought we were done with that shit. But yeah, maybe this is
stealth walkers decloaks off his starboard bow. What?
Tons of them.
On Daryl, snuck up on Daryl. The only herd of walkers, a school bus full of walkers, snuck up on Daryl. Okay, all right. I see what's
happening.
I can
only imagine this is a continuity thing because this is all happening back in season 8, right?
That's true. This is happening during the shitty seasons. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So wouldn't that?
This is all Gimple shit. This is really attention to detail and accuracy.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it.
I'm giving it to him. It's just keeping in continuity here. But yeah, the woman beckons him to hide behind a tree with her. They get very, very close. Very.
Yeah. They're like, have you seen snow falling on the cedars?
No.
This is a scene like, you know, they're like, they have to hide in a tree and they're just because of this, they're pushed tit to tit. Because of the close quarters here.
So well, this is a Carl and
physical intimacy.
Enid scene, right? I mean, didn't they do the exact same thing?
You're fucking right. They did have a snow falling on cedars moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we get another one of those. That movie. And then Daryl says, "Stay away from my camp." And she says, "Fine. My name's Leah. Bye."
Yeah. Uh-huh. This is the way the people that want each other to stay away from their camps. Behave.
Oh yeah.
This is like Indiana Jones like having a slap fight with the Nazi before he finally French kisses her and fucks her in Venice, right? You know?
Sure.
Like, I hate pushy men and I hate fast women as like they're stripping and getting like already starting to fuck. Yeah.
Yeah, except this time it involves dead fish.
Except for there was actually a lot of chemistry between Harrison Ford and that actor. There's do you buy the chemistry here between
It's
Leah
tough because, like you said, Daryl's just told to, you know, be a wild dog and a stone statue of a wild dog. I don't know. It's tough
and
to
she's
say.
She's like throwing B-list soap opera kind of acting heat.
Yeah.
You know, like she just found out that her lover is actually his evil brother from Panama who's been posing as a plastic surgeon and she's swinging for the daytime Emmys. Not going to get it, but she's wanting a nom. She's wanting a nom this year.
I thought she was good when she was being threatening. I did not think she was good when she started to open up. But
like
the material
himself.
Is so fucking bad. I don't know if I blame her.
It's really bad.
Because this speech that's coming up, my God, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, she's a tread. The thing is like when I first saw her, I'm like, okay, all right. Kind of like a badass mountain woman for Daryl. Uh-huh. Attractive, kind of like right in that. But then it's just like every time she opened up her mouth, I'm like, oh my God, it's a horror show.
I think it should have been like Mags Bennett. I wanted to see Mags Bennett in this, in a 5-year montage love affair with Daryl.
Make him a nice glass of apple pie.
3 months later, Daryl throws a dead fish at Leah's house. and camps nearby. And she finds him and she throws the same fish at his head. And this is a big fucking fish. It's like,
it hits with a wet
8-pound
slap.
Fish.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It probably did some damage to him. Hits him right in the head. They both agree we're going to leave each other alone. You know, they had to come together to make sure that happened. But then they have a conversation.
Be nice.
About being out in the
woods. I
just
want to be left alone. I will.
She notices he's cold and invites him to her cabin. What is this term? Look, I get everybody in the apocalypse has a term for zombies that is different, right? Walkers, biters, you know, dumb fucks, whatever. We have an agreed upon term for when your fingers get too cold to function. It's called frostbite. What is this frost nip shit she's going on about?
I don't know. I've heard Frank Sinatra tell that Jack Frost can nip at your nose. So maybe sure. This is a corruption of frost bit Jack Frost nipping, and she's frost nipping. I don't know if this is like pop versus soda versus cola. It's a kind of regional difference.
I've never heard frost nip.
In my life heard frost nip. And also, like, I think it's hilarious. Dare's like, I've gained frost bit. It got better. And she's like, well, what happens if it's like, if you get frostbite and it's not medically treated, you lose a toe. Is Daryl saying that he's got no toes? He's missing a pinky?
Yeah. I wonder if he's got like just a few missing toes. That could be.
I don't know.
I don't know. But it was weird.
It's a plight of the rural poor. Sometimes you miss a toe. This happens.
It's true. He goes to her cabin and he wakes in the night to find Leah hunched over a broken picture of her and a boy. She tells Daryl the Cliff Notes story of her squad, how they got together, and the longer, much more graphic story of her nephew correct me if I'm wrong, because I had
big asterisks on all of these terms you're throwing around. Squad, right. Nephew. Yeah, because I have no idea.
And I just couldn't follow her thought pattern here. Like, she is jumping from story to story. But what I think happened, her nephew became her son after his mom died during childbirth. Then,
but that wasn't her sister. That was just a member of her squad. And that's basically like family, right?
Is in the same way that Rick's a brother. Now I see what they're doing here.
Yeah, yeah, and then this is very fast and furious family rules, but yeah. They track.
And then that kid died of a zombie bite. I don't know. I needed a fucking mind map to get through this scene. I started writing 100%. Down, like, what are the feelings I get when I hear these? Because maybe that'll inform what she's talking about. I couldn't tell the timing on this because at some point, she jumps from a story about her sister dying when Matthew was born, right? She says, like,
this is another problem.
She says, my sister died during childbirth. He became my nephew. And then the story just kind of continues from there, but not.
She goes
from
she
that
goes, this
moment.
Doesn't even matter. She runs out of the room and then cries out a window, and Daryl follows her, and then the story continues. Yeah.
What I think you're supposed to notice, what Daryl couldn't possibly notice. So I imagine Daryl standing in the corner, confused as can be. There right. is a grave marker outside.
Yep.
That you're supposed to realize is her son. And then the conversation
3 foot
without
from the house foundation,
without anybody like saying anything about it, like switches to the mode of her talking about the day that her squad was attacked, which I thought she was still talking about the birth of her nephew.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, when she said that the dog was also pregnant with dog, I yep. was like, okay, so the kid is born, his mother dies, he becomes the son of his mother's sister while dog is pregnant with dog, and on the same day, he's eaten by walkers and dog gives birth to dog, so this is all happening on the same day. But how is that possible?
So
because she has a picture of him as like a 12-year-old, but he died on the day that his mother had him.
At least six. The math does not work on this. The math does not work on this at all. And but you're supposed to understand that like dog is her son through the transitive property of her crazy brain that like anyone that she's spent 5 minutes with is related to her. I think Daryl's her brother now.
Pre-incarnated into a dog.
Yeah, I think that's literally the and that's why there's so much meat. Like you don't need to give me an emotional backstory for why a man loves his dog, Walking Dead.
No,
like they just fucking do. Man's best friend. Have you ever heard the phrase? But I feel like this dog is special. This dog is literally the son of his dead lover that he had mysteriously this whole time.
Yeah, it was so like over the top with the trying to be gut wrenching, and I wasn't buying any of it because I couldn't fucking follow any of it. But it was so over the top that I expected her to turn around and say, "I'm pregnant with dog's baby, and it's yours now. It's your son."
Right.
The doctor who delivered
the father
my
was
nephew,
Merle.
And also the dog was also pregnant with me. Like, none of it made any sense. None of it.
No, and it's she's terrible, and like you said, it's bad material, but I think it's like one of those Ouroboroses of just awfulness where a bad script is being handed to a bad actor who is just destroying the whatever values. You get Anthony Hopkins, maybe he can do something with this, but she's not Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
It's pretty bad. I did think that, like, I will say that one grace note is when they handed the trauma ball to Norman Reedus. When he's talking about, she's like, "Well, who did you lose?" And he's like, "My brother." And I'm like, "Oh, he's talking about Merle."
Right.
But then as he tells the story, I'm like, "Wait, Merle didn't die of an accident." And he's like, "Oh, he's talking about Rick."
Yeah, that was good.
I thought that was because it's not the first time they've talked about themselves as brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I thought that was really sweet. It's a nice callback. And all Norman Reedus has to do is kind of look thoughtfully into the middle distance to have me like really sold that he's like torn up about Rick. So like all this, her talking a mess is horse shit, but like, I really appreciated the stuff about Daryl and Rick here.
Yeah, me too. Then we move on to Leah teaching Daryl to spearfish. I this is why I think he can't fillet a fish until this scene, because she's teaching him how to fish, I guess.
No, I thought they were making a comparison. See, here's where I thought, like, are they laying romantic tracks for Carol? Because this is exactly what happened with Carol, where Carol, like, you know, is lucky on the first time. And then they make a direct reference to her, this girl who Daryl falls in love with, being handy with the fish gigger.
All right.
I think he's just expressing surprise that someone who has never gigged a fish before, like, because there's things you got. There's refraction. You got to aim like a little lower than you think you're aiming because the, you know, blah, you know, you've seen the straw going into the glass and it's off centered and.
Sure.
So I think he's just expressing surprise at her being good at this thing. And you're supposed to draw a connection to Carol and I guess the effect, but I don't know. They spent so long with Daryl keeping Carol at an arm's length, and she's expressed obvious interest in him in seasons past. It feels weird that now they during the spinoff that they would turn this into some kind of moonlighting thing. Am I crazy? Or
when her
family
dies
here?
For the fifth time, I guess she's ready to make a go of whatever's left. I don't know. Yeah.
or maybe they're like, you know, we got to scrap as big an audience from The Walking Dead. So let's pretend to the shippers that we might actually do something. But let's pretend to the people who think that they just have a brother sister relationship. There's lots of brother sister banter. That energy can never go sexual. Like it's like they're doing Schrodinger's ship here to try to keep everybody invested.
Yeah. Could be. I don't know, because I'm kind of at a loss as to how exactly they get back to something that looks like a spinoff for these two characters in one season. But
yeah, that's the drama.
It's a long season too.
Yeah. But yeah.
All right. Let's take a break before we get on to the next scene.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Bye.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
10 months later. Daryl's leaving for a few days, and Leah is very upset by it. She wants him to essentially choose where he belongs. And he makes that choice, but it's not one she likes, because he's out in the woods with his map when Carol swings by a shelter, and Daryl tells her he's moving. Carol says, it might be a while before she comes back, because she wants him to find some peace with Rick being gone, but Daryl's too stubborn for that.
Been beating these 100 acres for a long time now, Carol. Got to move on another 50. This is the shortest honeymoon of all time. They go from sucking and fucking, and 10 months later, everything's busted.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the obvious solution is just go back to Alexandria with him, dummy.
Yes. That would make a ton of sense.
But they don't, because that's what Carol probably wants to do. Let's just fuck off on a boat, you and me. And they need to have some kind of tension, which I guess is smart. Because, again, the tension isn't whether Carol and Daryl are going to live now. It's going to be how does their relationship survive when it seems like it's on shaky ground. Like, all this is just a very labored metaphor for what's going on with Carol and Daryl right now. And, like, kind of wish they just had Carol and Daryl work this shit out rather than through the lens of this flashback. But. Can only say that so many times in a single podcast review. It's the law. You can only make the same criticism three times and they cut you off. iTunes just mutes.
I Walking Dead does so many broken, damaged people. It's rare. I can't even think of an instance where we found a healthy human being in all this.
I don't think there's any left. It's like this world.
How can there not be
shitty.
Any?
It's How just, can there be any? When you're running from zombies literally all the time, there's no government, there's no medicine, there's no education system. Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Rick is like, I guess, the closest thing we got after he went insane and came back.
Yeah, the man
from that.
Who thinks he's getting phone calls on an unplugged phone. He's the paragon of mental. The man who bit another man's throat out with his bare teeth. Paragon.
That was good reason
of mental
for that.
Health.
Good reason.
That's true. I'm not saying it wasn't justified. I'm just saying that like. Everyone's been through a throat ripper three at this point in the zombie apocalypse, and they're all crazy.
Yeah, but he came back around.
It's true. His mercy prevailed over his craziness.
You know, they're going to continue to do this until the end of the show or the end of the property, right? The Walking Dead as a thing. It's kind of the hallmark of the show. So I don't know. And so, like, is this woman going to want to go back to Alexandria? Because that's the only reason I could think is, like, she's so broken that she doesn't want to go to Alexandria. No, Daryl's looking for Rick. He's not going to Alexandria.
Yeah, like, if you, you know, a year before the beginning of this episode, Carol was Carol Cabin on the outskirts of the kingdom. Like, mm-hmm. again, this is just a one-to-one allusion they're drawing from Carol and Leah.
Yeah.
But why? Because they're showing that, like, Daryl couldn't have a relationship with someone until he had healed from whatever trauma. And I think that's the long-term arc they're setting for Carol, is that Carol has to get to someplace good, mm-hmm. where she's no longer, like, so damaged that she does crazy things. Or maybe one last time it causes them to be ostracized from Alexandria. They're, you know, like, kicked out of the Garden of Eden, like Adam and Eve or something. I don't know.
God, but why would Daryl go with her? Like, it just doesn't seem like they're in a place where Daryl's going to go along with some other insane plot that is obviously going to hurt people.
I don't know. Carol's really important to him.
Yeah, but he's telling her, like, how it is now.
Well, but he told Leah how it was, walked off and regretted it, said, come and find me. So, like, maybe he's learned his lesson that he's got a and I'm not saying it's, like, romantic, but he's got a connection to this person. He doesn't want to lightly throw it away.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense.
Good for him. I like that.
Yeah. And he takes this information in the last season, like, all the times he reassured Carol, I'm not, you know, I'm still your friend. I'm not going anywhere. I'm still your friend. Not going anywhere. Like, but now he is changing his tune, as we're going to get to in the next few scenes.
Mm-hmm. So Daryl finds Leah's cabin Leah-less, but Dog is still there. He draws Leah a map of where he's headed and a note to come find him, then takes off into the woods with Dog following.
She's dead, right?
I assume.
Or taken.
The point is, he doesn't know, right? Like, that's the whole thing here. It's a Rick parallel. That's what I'm saying.
They're setting up another fucking Rick situation. But it's like, if the dog, like, this dog is her son, like, they explained this painfully to us, there's no way she leaves it willingly.
I wouldn't think so. Also, she's waking up with zombies in her bed. So, yeah, she's probably dead.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true. She's got indoor, outdoor running zombies in her house.
Then we come back to probably the best scene of the whole episode. It's present day. Daryl finishes telling Carol about Leah. He doesn't know where she is and thinks it was all his fault that yet another person has been lost to him. Carol says, you can't blame yourself for that. You know, those other people we lost, like Connie, because that was totally your thing, right? Daryl's like, nah, now that's yours.
Uh-huh.
And she apologizes for that. Yeah, that's the exact wrong thing to say. Don't bring that fucking name up in this context.
But I feel like she was trying to intentionally provoke this fight that she has been feeling the entire episode, right? Like, she's trying to kind of like she's like the equivalent of pulling his pigtails the entire episode. And then she finally, like, hits real close to the mark and he can't fucking take it.
Yeah. So she doesn't apologize specifically for her actions. She thinks that was all fine. And Daryl accuses her of being on this hunting trip because she's running from her guilt. And he says it was a mistake to keep her from running away on the boat, and tells her to run if she wants to.
I thought that was powerful when she's like, you know, when he's starting to preach at her, arguably. She's like, look, man, I don't need a savior or a martyr. I just looking for a friend out here. And he's like, friends don't have the same damn conversation again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, when she threw back, like, well, you should just let me get in a boat. Him saying, yeah, you're right. I should have. It's an interesting statement. Because, like, I wonder what would have happened had Carol not been there. And if Alexander Hilltop fought the Whispers on their own terms, I'm not sure it could have gone worse. Because,
yeah,
half of the settlements got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Hell of a lot of people died. And ultimately, I don't know, but it's like dropping the bomb, you know, dropping an atomic bomb. Like, we still debate about the morality of that. But back in the day, it's like, you know, that they did what they did. What then? What are you going to do about it? Like,
right. And it's a lot easier to look in hindsight and say, oh, but this, you know, was a terrible thing to do because it led to that. Well, who knows
I mean, the people that are always like urging caution and like thinking about things, like the people that take action and it works out, like, well, we took action and it worked out. How can you? And the people like, well, but yeah, if we'd spent a couple more days or weeks to try to do diplomacy, then maybe we wouldn't have had to. Now, you can't be diplomatic with the Whisperers, but no, I felt like there was a lot of signs that that thing was about to fall apart on the inside.
Yeah, you know, it's just how much did they know about that, right?
It's like, imagine what we'd do if Negan was turned, and he's not even like on the level of like that. She'd have to turn something like Gabriel for the Gamma situation to be analogous, right? And so they turned the second lieutenant into a double agent fairly easily.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Alpha was killing people left, right, and center for minor disagreements and being afraid and doing all this stuff. So like, I kind of feel like, yeah, if they had just kind of like maintained the blockade or the Cold War, that the Whisperers would just fall apart. But, you know,
yeah.
Carol ended it decisively. So how are you going to say she didn't?
Right. I don't know. There's definitely like a. I don't think Daryl's like trying to stick it to her here necessarily, but there is an element of that, right? Like, I should have let you go is saying something about like, I'm stronger than you kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't think he's like intending it to be super hurtful. Though it definitely is. It's more like the right thing to do in this situation is to be with your friends. And that's what I'm doing. And to not, you know, not run away from these things. And this is something he learned over the course of the last 5 years. Hanging out with Leah, right? He regrets the decision he made to leave Leah because, now she's another lost person. I think so.
Because he says the thing that makes me think otherwise when he says, I know where I'm supposed to be. And I think he means Alexandria now. So, which is an interesting question because we know that the spinoff, I assume, is going to be them leaving Alexandria. Like, they're not going to hang around Alexandria. That would be kind of a nightmare situation.
Maybe regret is the wrong word. It's more like he's learned something from it.
That you have to pick a place and you gotta commit. You can't just like run away whenever you're feeling in your feelings and
get on a boat and leave your fucking family. Yeah, that's
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think that sets up the like it's not like whether Carol and Daryl are gonna survive, it's whether they're gonna survive with the relationship. And now that Daryl says, like, well, I know where I belong, he clearly means Alexandria.
Yeah.
It clearly means that he has to be the uncle to little ass kicker and her brother,
which means
he has to be a community leader. So like, what is going to change in his character and his relationship with Carol in the next 24 episodes that's going to make all this believable? Because like, you know,
the place
where
he belongs
is
wiped off the map.
Yeah. And that's why I said like this last 15 minutes almost redeems the whole episode because this is truly interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and I hope they do it well. I know I'm saying I hope they do it well from an episode where they did it poorly, but COVID, blah, 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 all this other stuff. If I squint and I look at the shape of this episode, I see a really good episode that did some really interesting character work with Daryl and Carol. But, you know, if I put on my properly corrective lenses, lots of wrinkles and warts and unsightly roles going on here.
Do you think this is the last time that they have this conversation, that Carol says, yeah, I did something that led to death, but also I got it done my way? And
I hope not, because it's getting on the verge of Morgalizing.
Yeah, I just don't know if Daryl.
But this is the first time someone pushed back.
Yeah,
this is the first time to push back. So, like, I think the conversation will happen again, but it better fucking evolve. It better feel like a natural evolution of like a dance step of two people trying to reconcile. And I think the show's talented enough to do that. But like, yeah, it can't just be
it needs
Carol
to be the resolution
back
to that conversation.
Yes,
right.
A synthesis of what's always torn Carol between I love people and I protect people and I love and want to protect them so much it makes me do crazy shit to, oh, my God, I've done some crazy shit. I feel guilty. I got to go be Cabin Carol for a year because I can't trust myself to love people because when I love them too much, I do crazy shit. Like, there's got to be a synthesis of those into some kind of integrated, healthy person
because I don't want this kind of energy going on into the spinoff. No fucking thank you.
No.
Like if Morgan went off to Fear the Walking Dead to ponder the fucking philosophy of the stick for two more seasons. No, I didn't. So like, yeah, they need to settle this for sure.
Agreed. But they got a lot of work to do to get us there. All right, that's it for the episode. Do we have some feedback to do?
Yeah, we do. If you'd like to send us feedback, do so at watchingdead@baldmove.com, and we will consider your feedback. First up was Ando, who sent us a message saying, was so hoping the mask would come off to reveal it was Heath all along, mastered the art of the key card. keep up the great work. I will confess that there was a split second where that mask was going up and I saw it was a black man. And there was the word Heath flashed in my mind, and then the mask kept coming out. That's not Heath. But like, I was like, my body was jacked with adrenaline, like flight or fight response, that like they're bringing Heath in the fucking car and in the final, like the lead up to the final season. But no.
Why at this point? You know what I want? I want Heath to come back as like he's been roaming the countryside collecting key cards, and now he's a Gambit style badass where he's just throwing key cards at people, explosive key cards for some reason.
Or he could be like the Keymaster from like The Matrix 2,
yeah,
where he's just like a hundred loop of these things all over, and he's just like opening doors left, right, and center where they need it.
Yeah, he's like the shady dealer in Times Square who comes up to you, hey, you want to buy a Rolex? 80
he's
bucks.
He's got access. He's got access, man.
God.
All right, let's move along to Dan, who says a lot of the same things that we were saying. I don't understand the geography of this episode. How is it that Daryl could be so close to this woman in the cabin for years and not know it's there? It seems that Dog and Daryl can travel back and forth in less than a day's time, much less than a day's time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how long was she menaced by that zombie in her cabin with a shotgun? Like, however long you think that's plausible, that's the maximum he could have lived away from her.
Yeah, 8 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, surely he's either hunted or scouted for miles around this camp, right?
Mm-hmm. He's just doing a river-based search, which would be plausible. Like, if he's just searching the river, nothing else. But then why does it take him 5 years to search the banks of this river?
That's the thing. Like, if that map he pinned up was, like, of all of, like, the Carolinas and Virginias, and he's plotted, like, tidal charts and, like, explored islands, and, like, this is, like, a multi-state search area, fine. But there's no fucking way that this man cannot explore 100% of this river as depicted on the map, mm-hmm, in a 5 year time. But like, I also like people like, well, that's not the point, Aaron. The point is he's traumatized by the loss of his brother and he can't face him because there's the shame and there's guilt. And so, okay, fine. But like, just have him be like Carol Cabin, Camp Daryl. He's not out there saying he's searching for Dare. He just doesn't want to come back. He's non-commit. I don't know. I just felt
or have
like
him
there's better ways to tell
hundreds of miles of riverfront while he's pondering that, right? Like, you created this artificial story of this woman in a cabin. Have her go with him or something on this journey. Like, don't have them stay in one location because that's stupid.
The problem is this is a suburb of Washington, D.C., canonically. So like it can't the river flows to the ocean. Like there can't be hundreds of miles of river to explore. The geography just doesn't work that way. You don't. You tell a different story. You just have a bottle episode with Carol. And like, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but I watched the Breaking Bad shove two men into an underground box and they had but one deep seated emotional issue to talk about. Mm-hmm. And the tension of watching them talk around that and that made one of the most electrifying hours of television I've ever seen. You don't need to gussy up Daryl and Carol going off and fucking burying the hatchet or putting the hatchet in each other's skulls if they're really dug in about it. Mm-hmm. Like the tension, like we all knew that they needed to talk this, like their attempts at humor and like, oh, like it had been fun to be like, you know, them setting out like, oh, it's just you and me again. And we don't have anything to worry about. And we're just here hunting. And then like, you know, you hit problems and little frictions and hurt feelings. And
And the episode ends the same way. It just doesn't have all this weird fakey bushcraft bullshit that he's been doing for 5 years. And I also think it's kind of lazy to make it to where like Daryl had to have the opposite and inverse and arguably worse situation than Carol, where Carol was the healthy one, for him to understand what she's going through. But yeah, it's a COVID episode. What are you going to do? I really hope, because honestly, these first two have been, the first one is okay. I had problems with. The second one was, I had a lot more problems with. I hope that they smooth out, because again, I had heard from multiple people that these were pretty good. These were treats.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of liked, you know, the things that they were going for in this episode. I just don't think they got there. Like they didn't have the writing. They didn't have the acting to get that done. But I think thematically, like the parallels were good. I didn't have any problems with those. And then obviously the scene at the end is very good.
That's a tough one to always answer. Is like, if they did this better, would I have liked it? Because almost always the case is yes. And then you were all aware of situations that wouldn't work if it wasn't done with like superb cast and superb writing, but it's hard to prove the converse. Like, well, if this was just A-level acting and writing, maybe it would have worked.
Right. I can't imagine B-level acting pulling off what like Anthony Hopkins does in season one of Westworld, you know, like that doesn't land if you don't have an actor of that caliber. So yeah, they just didn't quite get there. But I admired what they were trying to do, and it would have been good.
Yeah. Dan says, P.S. I missed The Expanse. Us too. Speaking of final seasons, that should be coming out towards the end of this year. And if you weren't aware of it, we've got pretty full coverage of that. I think we're spotty the first couple seasons, but we've got several full seasons worth of coverage, and the last two we have taken care of. So look forward to doing that this year. That's on Beltalota if you're looking for the podcast to check out. And yeah, if you're also looking for a good prestige science fiction show, that's the one that is the, I mean, maybe we get all excited and hyped for Foundation and Lord of the Rings and the House of Dragons, all that. But right now The Expanse is going on and not nearly enough people are fucking watching it. It's Game of Thrones in space. It's awesome. All right.
They finally got that merch deal though. Oh, fuck yeah.
Only 5 years last season, late. we'll get the floodgates of like decent fucking The Expanse merch.
Right.
If you would like to talk about The Expanse, send that in to beltalota@baldmove.com. But if you'd like to talk about The Watching Dead, you can send that to watchingdead@baldmove.com. And we will consider your topics for inclusion to the podcast. We'll be back next week with the third of these bonus episodes. We are almost halfway through the bonus episodes. We're getting dangerously close to being caught up to The Walking Dead and being ready for current season.
Yeah,
I'm getting pretty excited to see, like, to watch Walking Dead with fresh eyes with the rest of the world again.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming real soon. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.